Hitch managed to open his eyes and saw that the sun had just come up.
Hitch?
Kate McGinty appeared at the entrance to the dugout.
Hitch, is that you?
Oh, Hitch, what's happened to you?
Her fingers gently touched the back of his head where the pistol had struck him.
You've taken a fall or something. Or you've been hit a bad lick. I'd better get you inside. Can you hear me, Hitch? There's nobody here but me and the baby. Law and Rascal are gone. Oh, I'll try and get you down these steps and into the house. Think you can help a little?
She put her arms around him and lifted him up. She was a strong woman to be so small. It took them a long time to get down those steps and inside, but finally he was lying on his stomach on a bed. Her fingers gently probed the wound.
That's an awful nasty cut. I'll have to clean it up before I can even see how bad it is.
She poured something over it that burned like coals.
You McGinty's! Anybody home?
Opening his eyes, Hitch saw Kate sitting in a rawhide chair beside the bed.
Rascal McGinty, you in there?
A man pushed through the flap and stood in the gloom of the tiny dugout, staring in surprise at the woman.
Mrs. McGinty?
Yes, I'm Kate McGinty, Sheriff. My husband's not here, and neither is Rascal.
A second man entered, and the two men moved further into the room.
I got some papers for your men folks, ma'am. Somebody hurt?
It's Hugh Hitchcock. I found him lying outside when I went to feed the chickens. I don't know what's happened to him.
The sheriff picked up the lantern for a closer look.
Damn it, Slant. I told you shouldn't have hit him so hard.
You hit him? But why?
He resisted a lawful and legal order, ma'am. But we didn't go to use him that badly. You reckon he'll be all right?
Hugh Hitchcock is a good and honorable man. He's not one to be clubbed this way. What was all this about?
I served a court order on him, taking custody of his cattle. Same order I got here for your men folks. An order for me to take all the cattle in the LR brand into custody for the county court.
So that's it. You stole Hitch's cattle, and now you're here to steal ours. Well, Sheriff, you've come too late. They're gone.
We'll find them.
Not in this county, you won't.
I'd sure give a pretty to know how everybody found out we was coming.
Old John Torrington will nail our hides to the barn if we let him get away with them cattle.
Your hide, not mine. I ain't working for him.
The hell you ain't. Let's go.
You're thieves is what you are. You talk about the law, but the devil himself wouldn't have you. You won't catch Law and Rascal now because Hugh Hitchcock sent us word. You might have hurt Hitch and stole his cattle, but in the end, he's beat you.
Yeah, we ain't beat yet. You coming, Sheriff?
Kate went back to Hitch.
You heard?
Yes.
When Joe Sands brought word, Law and Rascal and a friend of Law started gathering cattle the quickest way they could. They drove them all night. But now, they ought to be well across the county line. Ain't no way that sheriff can get our cattle now.
For the remainder of the day, Hitch was awake at times, but mostly he slept, fighting through a recurring bad dream of John Torrington and Prosper Selkirk driving him out of the country with a long cutting whip.
Kate, we're home.
The flap pushed open and Law McGinty stood there.
Kate, I see Hugh Hitchcock's horse out yonder.
Law saw Hitch then, lying on the bed, his head bandaged.
What's all this about?
That sheriff said he'd catch you too, did he?
Not till we was ready to be caught.
Rascal McGinty came in, saw Hitch, and bumped Law out of the way in his haste to reach Hitch's side. He turned to Kate.
How bad's he hurt?
Oh, I can't tell. They hit him with a pistol.
He'd been here all day?
I found him when I went out this morning. He's been like this, mostly asleep or unconscious. It's hard to tell which.
Hitch, you hear me?
I hear you.
How do you feel?
How do I look?
Like pure hell.
The sheriff went after Hitch's herd, too.
Rascal clenched his fists.
They get all your cattle, Hitch?
Just all I could round up in a hurry.
Me and you have had our differences, Hitch. But I owe you for sending Joe Sands. I owe you for what they done to you, too. If they hadn't been busy with you, they'd have been after us a lot sooner. We wouldn't have got away with most of our cattle.
You did get away?
Got far across the county line before they come riding up waving their papers. We told them they was out of their county, and they said they hadn't seen no sign. But we was on the Matthews country, and the Matthews men rode up and gave witness to it. That sheriff, he backed off like a scalded dog.
I'm glad, rascal.
It was you that done it for us. They probably drove your herd someplace to where somebody else picked it up before they came for ours. They gave us time. You'll be needing watching after till we see how bad hurt you are. Kate's the best watcher you ever see. You got a home here, Hitch, as long as you need it.
Rascal talks for me too, Hitch.
Then Hitch saw a third man enter the dugout.
Hitch, I believe you know Cato Bramlett?
I know him. I wish you didn't.
Hitch managed to raise up and eat a little supper. He found after a while that he was too weak to stay up, and he lay down again. Kate very carefully removed the bandage.
Oh, it's swollen worse, Hitch. But I reckon that's to be expected. Been a full day now since it happened.
She cleansed the wound once again.
Oh, I hope I'm not hurting you.
You never hurt anybody in your life.
Bedtime came with darkness, for nobody spent more money than necessary on kerosene for lamps.
Hitch, I think you should stay here tonight. Law, we can carry the crib over to Rascal's place.
No. I may be a little stove in, but I'm not so bad off that I can't go over to Rascal's myself.
Oh, are you sure?
When I'm dead, you can put me where you want me. I'm not dead yet.
Hitch had the McGinty brothers help him to Rascal's dugout. They put him on Rascal's cot.
Sat down here on the cot.
I could just as well sleep on the floor.
The cot is yours, so hush up about it. I slept on the ground so much of my life that when I do sleep on a bed, I feel like I'm putting on airs.
Cato Bramlett had followed silently, taking no part in helping Hitch, offering no conversation. He had a couple of blankets on the earthen floor. He pulled off his hat and boots and lay on one blanket and the rest of his clothes. He pulled the other blanket over him.
You don't like me, Hitchcock.
You and me don't see no ways alike.
Your way don't seem to have got you anywhere. They gave you a cow puncher shampoo and took your cattle. They ain't took nothing from me.
They'll kill you someday. And maybe everybody that's around you.
Hitch arose the next morning when he heard Rascal stirring. He sat up on the edge of the bed, the small room seeming to reel.
Oh.
Lay back down, Hitch. We'll fetch you some breakfast.
One baby here is enough.
It took some effort, but Hitch got himself dressed, and he stood up, bracing one hand against a dirt wall.
I believe I'm gonna make it.
Don't rush anything.
Hitch swayed to the flap and pushed outside. He moved toward the other dugout in short, halting steps. He turned his head carefully, looking back at Rascal and finding that the cowboy watched him worriedly.
Looks like my head was almost as hard as Slant Unger's gun barrel.
Don't you overstep yourself. I'd as soon bury my own brother as to bury you, Hitch. Kate, you ready for us to come in?
Come on, both of you.
The smell of fresh coffee was good, and Kate's smile glowed. She was scrambling eggs.
Set them down at the table, Rascal. Breakfast will be ready directly.
Rascal pulled a chair away from the table for him, but it faced toward the bed. Hitch couldn't look at that. He moved around the table.
If it's all the same, I'd rather sit where I can look out the window.
Cato Bramlett came along, and they all sat down to breakfast. It surprised Hitch how hungry he was. The men ate without talking. When Hitch had finished eating, he pushed away from the table.
Rascal, you got my horse up close. I'll be going home today.
You can't do that. Who'll look after you?
Same one who always does. Me. I've made up my mind to it, Kate. I'll be all right.
I might just go over there with you and spend a day or two.
No need in that.
Maybe some of our cattle strayed in that direction. It'll give me a chance to find them before the sheriff does. Could still be some of yours left in the brush too, Hitch.
I'm counting on it. It's one reason I want to get on home.
Law frowned as he rolled a brown paper cigarette.
Didn't figure on you leaving so quick, Hitch. There was some business we wanted to talk to you about when you felt better.
Business?
Bunch of us come up with an idea. We hope you might like to join in with us.
Well, yeah. Let's go talk about it outside. Not everybody has had breakfast yet.
Them big ranchers have got it in their heads they're gonna run this country with an iron hand. But there ain't no reason we gotta back away and let them, Hitch. There's ways for the little man to stand up and fight, and to earn himself a place here as strong as anybody. We can't do it standing alone. We all gotta stand together.
We stood together once. We lost anyway.
We lost a battle, but we ain't lost the war. There's one thing them big outfits understand and respect. Size. They're strong because they got a lot of cows. And cows mean money, and money means power. We can have lots of cows too, Hitch, if all of us combine what we got.
You're talking about a pool outfit?
We already got us a name and brand for it. The Three C's. Cowboy Cattle Combine. Them of us that got cattle, we're throwing them in for their value in stock. Them of us that got money saved up, they're buying stock and giving us some working capital.
Is Cato a part of it?
I got me an interest.
So have lots of other people, Hitch. Old Fant Gossett over in town, he's put money in and helped us figure some of the legal points, like getting us a charter for the corporation.
Fant Gossett, too. If Fant puts his money into anything, he figures on a return.
Oh, he'll get it. We'll all get it. I tell you, Hitch, pretty soon we'll have us an outfit big enough to hold its own against Selkirk or Torrington or any of them. They won't stomp on no poor cowboy anymore.
The big outfits won't recognize you. They won't accept your reps.
We'll have our own roundups. We don't need them. We'll be out there first. And with that many cowboys hunting for them, there won't be many mavericks get away from us. Give us a year, Hitch, and there'll be 10,000 cattle running these hills with the 3C brand on their hide.
Takes land to run cattle.
Them of us that have got places, we'll lease them to the combine. But there's all kinds of open range out here. The big outfit's got no more right to it than we have. We'll take our share. And did I say 10,000 cattle? Give us 2 years and it'll be 20,000 or 30. It's cows that make a man rich in this country. And we'll have more cows than anybody. We'll show them big outfits that they ain't so damn much.
Cowboy Cattle Combine. Sounds more like the Get Even Cattle Company to me.
I hadn't thought of that, Hitch. It fits. By God, it does fit. I wish we were called that.
John Torrington and them others, they'll call it a whole lot worse. You think they'll be standing still while all this goes on?
He'll be jumping around like a chicken with its head cut off, but there won't be a thing he can do.
Don't you ever bet on it.
We'd like to let you in on the combine.
I ain't got much left. You don't need me.
A lot of people look up to you. Some of them on the fence. They'd join up with us. They see you do it. Anyway, we owe you for helping me and Rascal save our cows.
I like to know my partners, Law.
You know us.
I know Cato Bramlett, too. And Fant Gossett.
I wish you didn't feel that way.
No, I wish I didn't have to. If I was you, Law, I'd take a good look at the people I was throwing in with.
I've had a good look at the people on the other side. I like my partners better.
How about you, Rascal? What's your feeling?
They done us awful dirty, Hitch.
Before Hitch was far down the trail, he knew he'd bitten off a large chunk trying to go home.
You want to turn back, Hitch?
I've come this far.
He was grateful when at last they rode over the final hill and he could see his place below.
You put a right smart of sweat into this place.
Maybe all for nothing.
You get down and rest yourself. I'll do up the chores.
Rascal looked around curiously.
What come of the chickens you bought off of Matthews?
I'm not around here enough to watch out for them. Seemed like every day or two I'd come up with one less. Sometimes I'd find a half handful of feathers, sometimes no trace at all. Them coyotes, they can sneak in here in broad daylight and raid you while you're looking off. Only got 3 or 4 chickens left. They're so weary that I can't even find their eggs. I wish the coyotes would get them too, so I could stop worrying myself over them.
Messy anyway, a chicken is. I'd rather walk amongst cattle any time than amongst a bunch of chickens. If it wasn't for Kate and her cooking, we wouldn't have chickens on the place. She is a dandy cook, Hitch.
I noticed.
Kind of nice having a married brother. You get to be a bachelor and still have a woman do the cooking for you. Ain't hardly any way to beat that. You never did have no brothers, did you, Hitch?
We got 3. Back home in South Texas. They've never come up here, though. I don't expect they ever will.
Then you'll have to find a woman for yourself. You can't get by easy like I done. A woman sure does pretty up a place, Hitch.
I noticed.
Hitch slept well that night and felt much better the next morning. He and Rascal ate an early breakfast, saddled up, and began writing out his claim and the draws and swales around it that might conceal cattle he had missed in his hurried roundup the other day. Among other things, he hunted for and finally found the hat he had lost where the sheriff had overtaken him. They stopped in the shade of a big cottonwood at noon to chew on tough jerked beef and to rest a while from the heat. Hitch still had a constant headache, but it was less than yesterday's. They'd gathered a small herd of cattle through the morning and now let them drift and graze along the banks of the creek where the cottonwoods grew.
22 cows, 14 calves is the way I count it. They didn't leave you much, Hitch.
They won't leave me these either if I don't drift them out of the county before they make another drag through here.
We'll run them over toward the Matthews place where we took the LRs.
We don't want to overstock that country. If it comes a dry summer and a hard winter, we'll all be in trouble.
Them few you got left won't overstock anybody, and you're already in trouble.
The two men took advantage of range hospitality to go over to the Matthews ranch, knowing they would be invited to have supper and spend the night. Walt and Ben Matthews ran perhaps 1,000 or 1,500 cattle, which was more than Hitch and the McGinties and several other cowboy operators combined. They'd remained neutral and untouched during the strike. They never hired more than 2 or 3 extra cowboys. Their wives were fruitful, and they raised their own help. Hitch and Rascal were welcomed and given their evening meal. Then they each found a place to spread their blankets for the night. Next morning, Walt and Ben Matthews suggested they had several days of work on which they needed help and offered standard cowboy wages if Rascal and Hitch would stay. Hitch figured they did it more out of sympathy than need. He declined. Rascal accepted.
You sure you're able to be by yourself now?
I'm all right.
The cooking's good over here, and so's the company.
I want to be home where I can think things out. I got some decisions to make, Rascal.
You think some more about that combine deal. You'd be a good manager for the 3 C's.
I'll study on it.
He did not have to give it much study. All he had to do was remember that Fant Gossett and Cato Bramlett each had a part in it. He regarded Gossett as a windbag and opportunist whose integrity was in serious doubt. He had no doubt whatever in regard to Bramlett's integrity. He took his time going home, riding out some of the breaks in hopes he would find other 2-diamond cattle he had missed. He found 1 cow mixed with several carrying the figure 4. 1 maverick heifer was running with the bunch. He knew within reason that she probably had been weaned by a figure 4 cow, but there was no way for him or anyone else to prove it.
1 heifer. They owe me 100 times that many, but sis, you're a start.
Hitch quickly roped and branded the cow, letting her continue to roam with the herd.
That's just Maverick number 1, Prosper Silkirk. You and John Torrington owe me 100 more. And you're going to yield them up.
Hitch did not expect finding mavericks to be easy, and it wasn't. 3 weeks of hard riding netted him only 9 mavericks. At this rate, he would never be even for the cattle they had taken from him. For as time went on, the mavericks would be even harder to find. The competition was severe. One day he came across a scattering of snake track cattle along a creek and gently rode through them. The wagon crew had worked this area within recent weeks, for the calves carried fresh snake track brands to match the ones their mammies had. Not a maverick in the bunch. But Hitch did find a single bull calf following a figure four mother. This calf somehow had escaped both iron and knife. Had he not still been following a plainly marked mother, he would have been free for the taking.
Damn them, they owe me.
Then came the idea, a hair brand. It was not quite legal, yet it was not really illegal either. This was simply a brand made on the hair, but not on the hide. Unless inspected closely, it would be regarded as a regular brand, and a company cowboy was likely to ride on by and give the calf no further attention. But through the long winter months, the hair would grow out. By the time the calf was weaned, there would be no sign of a brand, and the calf would then be a maverick. The plan was so simple and easy that Hitch was surprised it hadn't come to him before. If the cow belonged to Selkirk, he could put a figure four on her calf's hair. Likewise, a snake track if she belonged to Torrington. Granted that other maverick men would have as good a chance as he to take that animal next winter or spring, at least he should be able to catch a good share of them. If he worked at it, for every two or three calves he hair-branded, he ought to be able to harvest one maverick later. Even if caught, he could show that he had broken no law. The brand he placed on the calf would be the same as the one carried by its mother.
Torrington, Selkirk, you pay me yet.
Hitch roped and hair-branded the calf, but when he was finished, he had an uneasy feeling in his gut.
I don't know what's so bad about it anymore. Everybody does it. The big take away from the small, and the small take away from the big.
He stood up and looked at the brand again. Nobody would ever know, but he would. This was the first time in his life he had ever stolen anything.
I never thought any man could force me to this. Oh, hell, it's their own fault. They brought it on themselves. I'm only taking back what they stole from me.
He reached for the tie rope to let the calf up, but he couldn't bring himself to jerk the knot. He knelt, cursing himself for weakness and indecision.
Oh, what the hell?
Hitch dropped the cinch ring back into the fire. When it was hot, he branded the snake track well into the hide, where it would stay. Then he let the calf back up.
Get before I change my mind. No charge, Torrington. But damned if I'll ever do it again.
He mounted Walking Jack, recoiled the rope, and started home, hunched in anger at himself.
John Torrington, you and Selkirk may break me. You may take away all I've got except one thing. That's my pride. Be damned if I let you turn me into a thief.
One day he looked up from digging post holes and was shaken to discover a man sitting on a blue roan horse, silently watching him from perhaps 30 yards away. Hitch didn't know how long he'd been there. He had been so busy fussing with rocks in the post holes that he hadn't noticed him ride up. He rubbed his sleeve across his face to stop the sweat from running into his eyes, and he tried to clear those burning eyes long enough to tell who the man was. He was no one Hitch had seen before.
Howdy. Come on over.
The man just sat there.
Howdy! Come on over!
The man still sat there staring at him. Though Hitch didn't know him, he became increasingly afraid that he knew the type.
I said, howdy. Now what can I do for you?
Hitch saw the pistol in the holster at the man's hip, and the sun caught the shiny stock of a saddle gun in a scabbard under his leg. Directly, the man touched spurs easily to the roan horse and moved up in what seemed like the slowest walk Hitch had ever seen.
Which one are you?
My name is Hugh Hitchcock.
Hitchcock? I remember. They said you was wagon boss for old Wade. Had lots of men working under you. You was really somebody. The mighty do fall, don't they?
What brings you here?
I'm the new deputy sheriff of this county. Name's Leafy Dodge.
The chill came again. Leafy Dodge had been mixed up in that Lincoln County trouble over in New Mexico. Some said he'd been a friend of Billy the Kid, Some said he'd been an enemy. It didn't matter. Neither way was any recommendation. It was said he hired out the use of those guns to whoever offered his price. He called himself a shootist, which was a way of saying he was an artist with a gun. He had the reputation of being an undertaker's friend.
Something I can do for you?
You could move out.
Well, this is my place.
I know a couple of men who would buy you out. If I was you, I'd be in a notion to sell.
You meaning to threaten me?
I never threatened nobody. I've never had to. I always been one just to state the facts and let a man make up his own mind which way he stands. The facts are that there's some people that don't cotton to a lot of squatters setting themselves down on the river.
I'm no squatter. I got the papers.
That makes you a higher class squatter than some, but a squatter just the same.
Nah, we're all squatters in this world when you look at it that way. The land belongs to the Lord. We just use it a little while.
I wouldn't know about that. I just know there's some taxpaying citizens worried about this bunch of squatters. The trouble with a squatter is he don't generally have much of his own, so he uses that which belongs to the other man. Land, cattle, all of it.
Has somebody accused me?
Can't say as I know. I was just sent here to deliver a message. If they decide they got another message for you, I'll be back.
Hitch had to finish building those corrals, but now it was a nervous, unpleasant job. Because Dodge had caught him digging post holes the first occasion, each time Hitch went back to it, he kept thinking he might look up and see Dodge there again on that big roan. He kept expecting to. One day he looked up and saw a rider coming, and the breath caught in his throat. But he knew the horse, and he knew the man by the way he rode, shoulders cramped as if they hurt him with every step the horse made. Charlie Wade. Charlie was by himself, which didn't particularly surprise Hitch. What surprised him was that Charlie came at all.
How do, Charlie? Get down.
Yep. Oh.
The two men shook hands and went through the amenities, but they were awkward about it, like strangers cautiously making themselves known to one another.
Come on up to the house, Charlie. I'll fix us some coffee.
Charlie Wade shook his head and dug into his saddlebag for a bottle of whiskey.
Coffee don't do much for the pain.
Well, anyway, I thank you for sending Joe Sands.
If anybody ever asked you, it was a hoot owl whispered in your ear. Sal Kirk's got me by the short hair. Been talking about calling in my loan. I reckon if he knowed that I told Joe Sands, he'd have called it already.
Well, that's too bad.
He's been mad ever since the strike. Says I didn't give him and Torrington enough support. If he calls that note, it'll bust me to a splinter.
That's rough, Charlie.
Goddamn Yankees. They've been after me all my life, it seems. Tried to kill me in the war, left me crippled. Been after my hide ever since I come up here and started spreading out and looking like I might overtake them. Don't seem like they can stand to see a native man pull himself up and mount to something. They'll slap him down every chance they get.
Charlie nodded his gray head and some of the old spark flickered in his eyes.
That's the consolation. I'd pay him off and then tell him to bend over and kiss my left hind cheek. At least I own a right smart of my own land, and some of them don't. From now on, every dollar I lay my hands on, I'm going to use it to buy land with. One of these days, that free grass bubble will burst, and then we'll see who's who. We'll see how them damn Yankees like having their faces rubbed in fresh doings. By God, I'll whip 'em yet before I die.
Charlie Wade, you'll never die. You'll just turn into an old gray mule and kick some young man to death.
That seemed to please Charlie. He eased a little.
They're a long ways from being whipped yet. They sent me a visitor the other day. Leafy Dodge.
The news was no surprise to Charlie.
I swear to you, Hitch, I've been no party to that. Old John Torrington was the one who wanted to hire professionals and break up the strike by force. Torrington and Selkirk wanted to make an assessment against all us ranchers to pay for the guns. I told them, hell no, and some of the other ranchers done the same. The way I heard it, Torrington and Selkirk wound up having to pay for Leafy Dodge all by themselves. You know Selkirk. He got the sheriff to deputize Dodge, so the county has to carry part of the load. You want to be careful of him, Hitch. He's a bad one. If ever he comes after you, don't be foolish and give him a chance. Take every advantage. Kill him any way you can. Oh, ain't really you I'm so concerned about, Hitch. I feel like you'll take care of yourself the way you always took care of me. But I am worried about Law and Rascal McGinty. You ever see him?
Sometimes.
I wished you'd go talk to him. They wouldn't listen to me, I'm afraid. I try not to remember what Law done. I try to remember the good cowboy he used to be. I'm worried about him, Hitch. He's putting himself in shape to get killed.
Hitch stared.
Hitch, you bought any interest in that Three C's outfit?
No.
Well, that's good. But Law's ended up to his neck. Something bad has got into that boy to make him throw in with the likes of Cato Bramlett. Law's been running figure four cattle down into the breaks and changing them over to the LR. Been changing the snake track into one of them other pool brands.
Hitch shook his head, hoping Charlie wouldn't see that he already knew.
He don't know it, Hitch, but Law's been watched. Remember what John Torden said about catching somebody and making an example of them? They got Law McGinty's name wrote at the top of their list. They're watching him, and sure as a spotted calf follows a spotted cow, they'll spring the trap on him. Then you'll know what they hired Leafy Dodge for. Maybe Rascal knows, maybe he don't. I don't believe he'd be a party to it, but he might know and not stop it. If he's around when they come for Law, they're liable to kill him for being in the way.
I doubt Law would listen to me.
Talk to Rascal, then, if you got any feeling for them boys and that little girl over there. Make Rascal bend a gun barrel over Law's head if he has to, but stop him. Them people want blood.
Charlie started to go, but he kept hanging back, wanting to say something more.
Worst day I've had since the war was the day you boys all up and left my wagon. Hitch, we still friends?
We'll always be friends, Charlie.
But somehow, Hitch knew it would never again be the same. Hitch found Law and Rascal shoeing horses behind their shed, and they went up to the house for a drink. He didn't see Kate. She evidently hadn't been aware of his coming, and he was glad for that. She would ask the reason for his visit. He didn't want to lie to her.
I'm not here for social reasons. I got something y'all need to hear.
If it's Leafy Dodge you're talking about, we already seen him. He scared Kate half to death.
Man, it ain't Dodge I come about, at least not altogether. Law, they all know you've been swinging the wide loop.
What you been telling?
I ain't told nobody nothing.
Hitch recounted what Charlie Wade had passed on to him. Law appeared more angered than worried, but Rascal's face seemed to turn gray.
If you're spreading stories, Hitch, you ain't no friend of mine.
I came here because I am your friend.
Like hell you are. You better go.
Damn you, Law. Shut your mouth and listen to somebody for once in your life. Hitch, we're doing all right. We don't have to steal. Not from nobody. I got a little outside work with some of these little ranchers now and again, and if we're careful on what we spend, we'll make it through. We don't have to steal.
What you're doing ain't necessary, Law. You got a start here, you and Rascal. Keep all your heifer calves, and you'll be surprised how soon you'll have a herd as big as Charlie Wade came to this country with. You got no need to throw in with the likes of Cato Bramlett. This other way is slower, but it'll get you there.
When I'm an old man with a beard down to my navel? I ain't waiting, Hitch. They owe us for what they've done, and they'll pay. The Three C's is gonna have 40,000-50,000 cattle before I'm done. They'll wish they'd never tried to mess with Law McGinty. You can cringe and bow if you want to, but I'm standing up and spitting right in their coffee.
In their eyes, you're a thief.
And in your eyes, too, I suppose. I told you already, you better go.
Don't underestimate them, Law. They mean business. That's why they hired Leafy Dodge. You got a wife to be thinking about, and a baby.
I'll take care of my wife. I don't need you to help me. Seems to me like you've been more concerned about her than you got any business being.
Law!
It's the damn truth! He wanted her himself, only I beat him to her. He knows he can't have her, and it eats at him. Don't believe me? Look at his face.
In the moment before he turned away, Hitch knew his eyes had betrayed him.
Law, Hitch come to help you.
By making me out a thief? Well, if you believe him, why don't you just go on along with him?
Hitch tells the truth, Law. I've known it a long time. Now I believe I will go with him.
Turning, Hitch saw Kate McGinty. She stared, eyes wide with hurt and surprise. Hitch's mouth dropped open. He wondered how much she had heard.
I was gonna ask y'all to stay for supper.
She broke off and hurried back outside. Hitch bided his time, living out of the garden and off of stray beef, the custom of the country. He worked on his small corrals each day. The build was slow going. Even before Hitch looked, he thought he knew. He had sensed the inevitability of it that day Charlie Wade had talked to him. Kate McGinty drove the wagon as if she were trying to wreck it. Her baby was tied in her lap, so both hands were free for the lines.
They're killing him, Hitch! They're killing him! Help me, Hitch! For God's sake, help me!
Kate's face was flushed red. Even as she blurted the story, Hitch was throwing the saddle on Walking Jack.
They came to get him, Hitch. They let me and the baby go, but they cornered Law in the dugout. He's trapped.
Where's Rascal at?
Gone on a job. You're the only one can help us.
How many are there?
Seven or eight.
They didn't hurt you none, Kate?
No. Please do something to help Law. He can't stand against them long.
You know where Dan Truman's place is and the Matthews outfit just passed it?
Yeah.
Get Dan and the Matthews men and anybody else in reach.
As Hitch looked back, he saw Kate slapping the lines at the team and driving them into a run again. She would likely kill them or run them into the ground. Hitch pushed his horse as hard as he dared, the hot wind burning his face. Seven or eight men, and one of them certainly, Lafey Dodge. He neared the McGinty place. He saw a lone horseman moving west, slumped in the saddle. The rider spotted Hitch, but kept his horse in a trot. Angling toward him, Hitch recognized the sheriff. The lawman appeared badly shaken. He started trying to wave Hitch back, but Hitch stayed on course and pulled Jack to a halt in the dry grass.
Hitchcock, go back to where you come from.
What's happened?
I had me a prisoner. They took him. Don't go over there, Hitchcock. It'll already be too late.
Law McGinty?
I tried to arrest him, and he got into his dugout. His wife and baby come out, and then we tried to smoke him loose. Finally, we brought the dugout down around him and drug him into the open. Then they taken him away from me, Dodge and them others.
You mean you let them have him? What kind of a sheriff are you?
I'm an ex-sheriff. That's what kind I am.
You're not a sheriff and never was. You're a coward.
There's worse things than being a coward. There's being dead. When I taken this job, they told me there wouldn't be nothing to it. Just a drunk cowpuncher now and then was all. They don't pay me enough to fight Lafey Dodge. If you're smart, Hitchcock, you'll wait a while before you go down there. Don't go amongst them while their blood is hot, or they might do it to you, too.
If they've done what you say they have, I'll be in to see you, Sheriff.
You better be quick about it. As soon as I get my plunder together, there won't be nothing left but an empty office. Yeah.
Hitch spurred Jack into a hard run over the hill and down to the McGinty's place, a cold knot drawn tight in his stomach. He found what the sheriff had told him he would find. The dugout lay in ruins, two ropes still looped around the center pole to pull it down. The dog had been killed. A milk cow lay dead in a corral gate, struck by a stray bullet. Hitch saw no men, but he quickly found the tracks of the horses. They led down to the river, where the trees were. Hitch had no plan. He wasn't even thinking ahead now. He simply gave full rein to a cold rage that took over. He pulled his saddle gun out of its scabbard. He saw the men clustered in the timber on the river, a couple on horseback, the rest afoot. The men stared in morbid fascination at the result of their work and didn't notice his approach. Lafey Dodge was the one Hitch watched closest. He stood on the ground. Old John Torrington in the saddle looked up at Law in satisfaction. This was not his first hanging. Slant Unger was also a horseback and equally unmoved. Whatever suited John Torrington was always all right with him. But on the ground, Prosper Selkirk was drawn up tightly, probably even trembling. It surprised Hitch that the man was here at all. Two Selkirk cowboys stood back to themselves as if ashamed. Tobe Ferris, Torrington's Negro cowboy, was the only man not looking up at Law. He stared at the ground. He might have been silently praying. Ferris caught Hitch's movement from the corner of his eye and turned quickly. Hitch was almost close enough to have struck him with a gun barrel. The other men turned then in surprise. Hitch was too choked to tell them to raise their hands. He motioned with the muzzle of his rifle, and they easily got his meaning. He held the saddle gun on the ready. In his rage, it was all he could do to keep from picking one of them and shooting him. He glanced up and felt sickness come over him. He forced his eyes away from Law McGinty's corpse. Leafy Dodge didn't speak. He stared at the saddle gun. Prosper Selkirk was pale. John Torrington glared at Hitch with more impatience than fear.
This man was a thief.
Cut him down!
Unger didn't move. Torrington glanced at the hired gunfighter.
Do something, Dodge!
Dodge shook his head, not for a moment taking his eyes off the rifle.
Damn it! What do you think we're paying you for? He don't know how to use that thing. He's nothing but a cowboy.
That's the most dangerous thing there is. A mad cowboy with a gun in his hands. He'll kill somebody sure as hell.
Well, I ain't afraid of him.
Unger spurred toward Hitch, grabbing for his coat. Hitch's bullet knocked Unger out of the saddle, and he writhed on the ground, clawing at a shattered arm.
God damn it, old man. I told you, you cut him down.
Torrington looked at the smoking rifle, and with care not to let his hand come anywhere near his gun, he fished a knife from his pocket. He cut the rope.
We're a legal posse, duly sworn.
You ain't no court. You lynched a man without a trial. That makes every man here a murderer.
Hitch motioned with the saddle gun.
One at a time, you'll drop your guns.
They did, until the turn reached Leafy Dodge.
Not you, Dodge. You keep yours.
The men looked at him in surprise, but Hitch was afraid to let Dodge touch a gun, even to shed it. He held the saddle gun aimed at them until they rode over the hill, Ferris and another man supporting Slant Unger. Hitch had seen a couple of saddle guns and wished he'd made them leave those, but he'd been afraid a man could pull a horse around to cover himself and bring a rifle into play. He'd left well enough alone. He considered the possibility that someone might circle back and try to pick him off. Gradually, he decided that they wouldn't come back. They had done what they came to do. He slumped. Throat tight, eyes afire, he looked down at the cowboy he had known for most of 10 years.
Law, you never would listen to a man, would you?
He noticed for the first time that Law's britches were wet. He realized, with sudden force, what terrible fear the cowboy must have suffered in those last moments.
God damn them! God damn them all!
It was more than an hour before Dan Truman got there. He took a long look at the collapsed dugout, then rode over to Hitch, standing beside the saddle shed. His face showed that he knew.
I'm too late.
We're all too late.
Hitch led him into the shed and motioned toward the corner where he'd carried Law out of the sun, covering him with a tarp he'd found there. A while later, the Matthews men loped in. Far behind them came Kate McGinty's wagon with a fresh team. Mrs. Walt Matthews was driving so Kate could hold the baby. As the wagon stopped, Hitch strode out to meet it. Kate McGinty sat looking at him, her face grave. In her eyes, he saw that he didn't have to tell her anything. She slowly handed the baby to Mrs. Matthews. Hitch raised his hands to help Kate climb down. She leaned into his arms. Hitch held her, helpless to speak. He knew not a word that could change a thing.
Where is he?
Hitch motioned toward the shed. Kate reached up and took the baby from Mrs. Matthews. She started to go into the shed, but stopped and looked back at the ruins of the dugout she had so carefully kept. Then she went into the cabin. The men remained outside.
What are we gonna do about this, Hitch?
What they done was murder in the eyes of the law.
Anywhere else, but not here. So what do we do now?
I don't know. We'll do something.
Later, when Kate was composed, Hitch began thinking about what should come next.
Kate, the other boys and I could work together and raise the dugout center pole so it could be fixed up and livable again. We can get started right away.
Thanks, but no. If we can rescue some things out of there that we need, that'll be enough. I couldn't stay on this place again.
Hitch thought he knew her feelings. There would be Rascal's dugout for a night or two if she needed it. After that, she would probably go stay with her mother.
Well, the first thing we have to do is put Law decently away. Do you want us to take him to town?
And bury him in Boo Hill? No, Hitch, this is his place. I want him buried on his own land.
All right. I'll go to town and find a minister and get your mother. While I'm there, I'll see what I can do to have justice done.
Don't get in any trouble.
I'll go with you, Hitch. You ain't going there all by yourself.
They rode straight to the sheriff's office. Hitch had little hope of getting satisfaction there, but he would try. He stepped through the door and stopped short. In a rawhide chair, feet propped up on a desk, sat Lafey Dodge, the silver deputy badge catching light from the window. He held a pistol in his lap and a cleaning rag. But Hitch suspected the rag was only to give him some apparent reason to have the pistol out. Every chamber was probably loaded.
Figured you'd be in.
Where's the sheriff at?
I gather there ain't no sheriff. Wrote out his resignation and left town. Want to read it? Suddenly decided town life was bad for his health, which looks to me like a good idea for some others, too. Town's hard on a boy who's used to the good, clean country air. Fella like you, out of the country, ought to come to town as little as he possibly can. Never, if he can help it.
You taking over the sheriff's office?
Reckon there ain't nobody else to do it. They'll have to call a special election to fill the vacancy. Looks like I'm all the law they got till then. Hope you boys don't figure on making no disturbance.
At the small adobe building in which Edson had set up his new banking business, Hitch reviewed what had happened. Depressed, Dan Truman stood in the open doorway, leaning against the jamb and smoking cigarettes as he watched the sparse foot and horse traffic moving up and down the dusty street.
Law didn't have to steal. I told him and Rascal if they wanted to borrow some money to buy cows, I could get it for them. But Law thought he could get big faster through the three C's. Maybe he figured that way he didn't have to pay anybody back.
He paid. We gotta have a preacher. I never been much to go to church, but I was hoping you'd know one.
Sure, Hitch. First thing a banker does in a new town is to join the church.
Dan Truman straightened up and threw his cigarette out into the street.
Hitch! It's Rascal!
My God, where?
Heading for the sheriff's office, hard as he can go.
Hitch passed Dan Truman on the plank porch and hit the street running.
Rascal! Rascal! Wait!
Rascal heard him, he gave no sign. He reined in at the front of the sheriff's office and dismounted. Even at the distance, Hitch could see the pistol in his hand.
Rascal!
He lost stride, expecting gunfire, expecting to see Rascal stagger back out that open door. But there was nothing. Rascal strode out again, the pistol still in his hand.
Where's he at, Hitch? I'm fixing to kill him!
Lafey Dodge had left the sheriff's office, but it wouldn't take Rascal long to find him in this town.
Rascal, wait up. We gotta talk to you.
You seen him, Hitch?
You're no match for him. He'll kill you.
Not if I get the first shot.
Hitch grabbed the pistol and gave it a sudden wrench. Hitch jerked the pistol from Rascal's hand and fetched Rascal a hard blow on the side of the head. Hitch grabbed the cowboy to keep him from dropping on his face. Dan Truman caught Rascal's left arm. Edson Biggs came running, not far behind.
He'll be sore at you, Hitch, but he'll be alive.
Hitch didn't expect to see many people at the funeral. He assumed that most would take Law's death as a general warning and would want to avoid displeasing the powers responsible. The crowd surprised him. Families arriving in wagons and buggies, single men, a horseback. Before time for the service, he estimated between 75 and 100 horses tied around the dugouts and down by the river. The biggest surprise, perhaps, was the quiet arrival of Charlie Wade and many of the W cowboys. Some of the river settlers and veterans of the strike edged back uneasily to give them room. Charlie Wade stood by his horse until he picked Hitch from the crowd, then handed the reins to a cowboy and walked to meet Hitch.
I come to pay my respects to Kate.
She's in the dugout, Charlie. I'll take you to see her.
Charlie hesitated at the steps that led down to the door.
I'd sooner take a whipping.
But he came on. The canvas flap had been laid open, and Hitch let Charlie go in ahead of him. Kate McGinty sat in a rawhide chair. Her mother and some of the neighbor women clustered in painful silence around her.
Kate?
Mr. Wade, I didn't expect to see you.
Took me a while to get the nerve to come, Kate. I want you to know I didn't have nothing to do with what happened. Done all I could to stop it.
I knew that all the time. I'm grateful to you for coming.
Kate, if there's anything you need, anything at all...
What I need, there's no way to bring back. But I'll always remember that you asked.
Charlie turned to leave.
Mr. Wade, one thing I want you to know. Law always respected you. Even after you left the W's, he never had a bad word to say about you.
Charlie didn't look back. He went up the steps. Hitch followed him. Charlie walked a short way from the dugout, then turned to look back.
Hitch, I meant what I told her. If she needs the borrow of any money, you tell...
Sure, Charlie. But it seems to me like there's something else that's badly needed here. What are we going to do about them that killed Law?
You got to remember, Hitch, he was stealing cattle.
A man goes to jail for stealing cattle. You don't get hung.
You had judgment enough to know when the strike was over. I hope you still know when to turn a loose or something. You got no chance to win.
When the time came, Hitch and the other pallbearers carried the pine coffin out of the shed and up the slope to a place Kate had picked. There were Dan Truman, Edson Biggs, Matthews' men, the ever-complaining Asher Cottingham. The minister followed, Bible in hand, as he walked beside the black-veiled Kate. She carried the baby in her arms. Behind them walked a solemn procession of people, many of whom could not possibly have known Law McGinty, but whose presence could be taken as silent protest against the manner of his dying. That the message would quickly reach Torrington and Selkirk, Hitch had no doubt. There were many people here whom he didn't know. Certainly among them must be someone who would report to the ranchers. They set the coffin on the ground and waited for the crowd to work around in a circle. The minister bowed his head for a prayer, then raised his chin and looked at the people.
Now, it is always painful for me to perform a service like this for one so young. For one whose life should have spanned many more years. Who should have been allowed to live to see his children grow to manhood. Who should have lived to see the seeds of his labor bear fruit and yield their harvest to him. It is always tragic to see a life cut down just as it has come to flower. But there is an even greater element of tragedy here, for this man was not swept away by some illness over which no man had control, nor was he the victim of some accident which no man could have avoided. No, he was willfully put to his death by plan, by men who assumed unto themselves a power which the scriptures plainly reserved to God alone. Had Lawton McGinty died of illness, or of some accident, we could have consoled ourselves that God's will was somehow served, but the act of murder is contrary to the will of God. Therefore, as we weep today, we weep in double anguish, for this death should not have been. This fine young woman should not be dressed in mourning clothes, and this baby should not have lost a father it will never be able to remember. So we come here today to mourn for Lawton McGinty. But let us do more than simply mourn. Let us pledge ourselves to seek some way of assuring that no other woman shall be left mourning in this manner, no other child left fatherless. There was a time, perhaps, when we could have shrugged our shoulders and said this was simply a thing that should be expected on the raw frontier, that harsh conditions somehow justify harsh actions. But my friends, the frontier is gone. We are a civilized people now, with laws and courts and established methods of justice. There are still some among us who live by the old ways, and this is a shame upon us, as much as upon them, for we do not have to allow it. We must rise up in righteous anger and declare to them that this shall not happen again, that we shall not be silent nor stand fearful in the presence of their power. We must show them that we have come into a new time, that we intend to see this land pleasing to the sight of the Lord and bountiful in His service. We need not bow to anyone but God.
The coffin was slowly lowered by rope. Friends filed by and dropped a little sand into the grave. People moved back down the slope without the order they had shown on the way up. A few women repaired with Kate into the dugout, and many of the people left. But many stayed, talking among themselves. They still simmered in the quiet anger aroused by the minister's words. Charlie Wade acted for a moment as if he wanted to say something to Rascal and Hitch, but the words wouldn't come.
Charlie, did you listen to what he said?
He's just a preacher, Hitch. A preacher don't have to answer for nothing.
Charlie climbed stiffly onto his horse, his cowboys trailing after him. Some of the other men gathered in awkward silence around the saddle shed, staring at each other, staring at the ruins of Law and Kate McGinty's dugout. Rascal wore a bandage around his head, as Hitch had done a few weeks earlier. He'd withdrawn into himself and spoken little, seeming like some wild creature wounded and bewildered and seeking solitary retreat in his misery. Now suddenly he let the grief begin to spill out and talk.
Pa died first, and then Ma, and then it was just me and Law. He was a little Dickens then, 10, 11 years old, and me just a button myself to look after him and try to raise him. Law would tag along behind me like a colt following after a grown horse, only I wasn't grown either. We wandered around a long time before we found us a place with old Charlie. Seemed like there was always a little hell in Law. It ain't like he meant no harm by it, though. He was always just funnin'. There never was no real harm in that button. Just a little more than his fair share of hell was all.
Rascal's fists clenched, and he cried out in a pain that was close to tears.
They could at least have shot him instead of hanging him that away. That's no fit way for a man to die. Even a cow-killing wolf is given that much of a show.
He looked around bitterly.
And where's the people that got him into this mess in the first place? Where's Fant Gossett? Where's Cato Bramlett?
Fant couldn't afford to shut down business. You know how it is with a rich, fat man. Cato Bramlett slipped out of town in the night, heading west. Figured he was likely to be next.
Rascal just shook his head at Asher and walked out to be alone a while. Edson Biggs's eyes followed him.
Law was born 20 years too late.
What do you mean?
I mean that Law had a lot more in common with John Torrington and Prosper Selkirk than he ever realized. Old man Torrington, he's greedy after land. Selkirk is greedy after money. Law was greedy after cattle. He couldn't get them together fast enough. If he'd been here 20 years sooner, when all a man needed was a fast horse and a long loop, he'd have been as big today as John Torrington, and probably just as mean.
Man, we gotta do something.
Hitch hunkered, eyes on the grieving Rascal McGinty. He had nothing to offer.
I've given this thing a lot of study, Dan, and I got an idea. Now, it's not a total answer, but it's a start. This county doesn't have a sheriff now. It has to call an election. The big ranchers will handpick themselves a man. I doubt they'll go so far as to put up Lafey Dodge. Now, his reputation would stir suspicion as far away as Austin. But they'll choose a man they can control.
That leaves us no better off than we've been.
I said election. And an election is supposed to have more than one candidate. Why don't we put up a man of our own to run? I think the strike brought changes in this country that you all haven't realized yet. I don't believe the big ranchers have either. Most of the men who went on strike here had always voted however the ranchers wanted them to. A lot of those men are still here in the county and thinking for themselves now. Now give them a man to vote for, and I think they'll hand these ranchers a surprise.
You saying you'll run, Edson?
Oh, not me. I'm not the man for it. But I know a man who's been here a long time and won respect for a clear head and leadership. Now I believe if we put his name on the ballot, he'll stand a good chance. I'm talking about you, Hitch.
Edson, you've lost saddle, blanket, and all.
I don't think so. The sheriff idea came to me first. Then I started trying to think of the men who would qualify. I kept coming back to the same one.
He's right, Hitch. You're the one can do it.
What if I had to shoot somebody? I've never even shot at a man, except a couple of Indians, and I've never done them any harm.
There's already one too many gunmen in this country. We want a man.
Well, find somebody besides me.
We need a man who'll stand up for the plain people and put a stop to the oppression we've had here. The only way to do anything about what happened to Law McGinty will be to get a sheriff who represents our way of thinking and not that of a few big outfits. The longer this thing goes on, the more chance somebody else will be killed.
I'm no fair opposition to Leafy Dodge.
You won't have to face him by yourself. Comes time, there'll be lots of men behind you.
Hitch, you listen to Edson, he's right. And remember, you promised me that something would be done about Leafy Dodge and them. It won't be unless you see to it that we have fair law in this county. I'm asking you as a friend, Hitch. Run.
Rascal pointed his finger.
One more thing. If you win, you'll need a deputy. I want to be him. I got a sore head that says you owe me that.
The minister moved up next to Hitch.
Mr. Hitchcock, I'll pray for you.
You damn well better.